How far back does recorded or known history of Warrnambool stretch?
Probably about 1836, and that is a recorded history. Of course, I'm sure there have been people sail by in boats. I think French explorers went past and made note of this part of the coast. But 1836, as far as more settlement goes, and that came from Portland and Port Fairy, whalers, and of course the Henties at Portland. So I think that the Hopkins Mouth was discovered by some sailors from Port Fairy who were shipwrecked there. One lost their lives and they walked back along the beach and discovered the famed Mahogany Ship.
I was going to say, yes, if we went back to the Mahogany Ship, who knows how far back that we might be going there.
Yeah, there are lots of theories about that. There's talk of the Chinese having been in this area and that actually the Mahogany Ship is a Chinese junk. There's stories that perhaps there were prisoners, convicts from Tasmania, often escaped, often stole boats or built boats and travelled north to, hopefully, north. Perhaps they're the only ones we know about. There was a story of one group of convicts who managed to find a boat in Tasmania, made landfall about this part of the southern part of Australia, actually sailed up the eastern coast of Australia and eventually ended up in China, at which point they were arrested and sent back to jail in England. And I have a personal theory that if they'd used those people as breeding stock for Australia, we would have had a really innovative and capable lot of people. Not that we have it now, but that was an intrepid journey, wasn't it?
Before we leave the Mahogany Ship, I should just ask you, are you a believer in the Mahogany Ship?
Well, I'm a believer in the Mahogany Ship in that I think there are probably several ships there somewhere in the dunes. The reported sightings are so many and varied that I believe that we probably got some convict ships. We may have the Caravelle. We probably got lots of other ships that were lost at sea, because some of the reported sightings are quite high in the dunes, some of them are in the water. And I mean, I know the tide goes in and out, but I think there's more than one.
Let's talk about European settlement then. So when, or do we know who perhaps the first person was who officially put their stake in the ground or whatever and said, yes, let's build here, let's make this Warrnambool?
La Trobe probably was showing interest, I think, in the late 30s, early 40s, and certainly he thought it was a reasonable place to establish a settlement of some sort. Of course, earlier than that, the Bolden brothers and the Allen brothers had been here grazing. The Boldens on the east of the Hopkins and the Boldens further north. In fact, the Allen brothers used the land or the beaches near Logan's Beach to actually send cattle to Tasmania across the Bass Strait. That would have been a journey and a half, I would think, and even the loading would have been difficult from a sea such as that.
So Alansford then predates Warrnambool, does it?
Well, not really. I think if you hear the name Alansford and Woodford, it indicates that they were the two crossings of both the Hopkins and the Merai. So Woodford was actually a little bit of a settlement before Warrnambool became the stronger settlement that it got to. I think by about 1850, 51, they were up to about 269, which is a massive total, isn't it? And there was, of course, a bridge built at Dennington in 80 years, and that changed the focus. I mean, the Woodford was obviously a reasonably easy place to get across the Merai, judging, I would imagine, as they did with their bullocks and drays, how they would manage to get across the Merai, and also it was the route that would have been the major east-west route. So that was why Woodford would have come into being first, and then Warrnambool established later under the support, I suppose, of La Trobe and Pickering doing the survey work.
So who were the first people then who might have been settling in Warrnambool? Those initial people, why were they coming here, and was it a farming sort of settlement, or was it a bit more urbanised right from the start maybe?
No, there would be no reason for it to be urbanised until such time as there was an industry of some sort. It was of course a bay, which was reasonable. There were initially jetties built here, which were battered by the ferocious and dynamic Southern Ocean, which led to many mishaps. Eventually, the breakwater was built about 1890. Well, that was when it was finished. And that changed the dynamics of the bay and has led perhaps to the silting, but also made a safer port, which allowed the exports of the agricultural product that was coming from the... the hinterland.
So was Warrnambool a very important port then to start with? Was that really its, I guess, what drove it being where it was, and the fact that it took hold, I suppose?
I've often wondered why Port Fairy was settled first and Warrnambool became, I suppose, the stronger population base. I think possibly the landform, the harbour, the fact that the township was laid out on top of the hill, but I think probably the water would have been what drove it, and the very rich hinterland. I mean, dairying does very well here. The land is very, very strong, and water was of course essential for anybody who was settling in the very early days. It was their first priority. It's the one thing we can't live without.
And that we have a lot of around here, and I presume we always have.
Yes, and I think the interesting thing is the way Warrnambool, in fact the whole of the southwest, seems to be really blessed in a way. We don't seem to... We have had the earthquake in 1903. We have had, of course, the horrendous bushfires, and Ash Wednesday, that was terrible. But when you compare us with other parts of Australia, we seem to... find it, we seem to manage to get through all of those things more easily. We don't suffer from floods to the same degree. The drought left us less affected than other parts of Australia, so I think we're blessed.
So from there then, how quickly did Warrnambool start to develop as a centre?
I think it grew gradually. Around about the 70s and 80s, 1870 and 1880, there was stronger growth. Of course, there were industries coming. There were hotels being built. There were breweries. There were tanneries, flour mills. But I suppose they were all, to some degree, dependent on the strong agricultural hinterland. And, of course, even now, if you look at the dairy, the milk factories that are close to Warrnambool really are very strong drivers of our economy, and I think we'll continue to be there. And with beef and cattle, for instance, that when the cattle price is up, the wool might be down a bit, or lambs might be not so good, but at the moment lambs are very, very good price, and so it seemed to be swings and roundabouts and quite a good balance in the economy. About 1890, there was a really strong feeling of optimism, probably the late 80s, and that was the period of time when the Ozone Hotel was first mooted. In 1890, the breakwater was finished, the railway was opened, it had come the previous year. I think that it was the year that the spire went on the Catholic Church, but I think that's a symbol of optimism. The telephone exchange opened. There were a number of things happening, and apparently there was a comment in the paper that if Maryborough, only a mining town, could support a coffee palace to accommodate visitors, then surely there could be money raised in Warrnambool to open the same kind of facility. So in 1890, the Ozone was opened. It was something like 150 rooms, five-storey, amazing architecture, and no beer. I think that lasted 13 months before they applied for a wine licence, and it really did have a chequered career with all sorts of changes being made over a period of time in an attempt to strengthen its financial viability. Then in 1929, February the 23rd, anniversary of it just last week, 1929, it was burnt, and that was really sad because it had been described in the Warrnambool Standard as an artistic triumph, and it really was a very beautiful building.
Yes, I mean, if it still existed today, it's hard to imagine what sort of impact it would have on the town. Even today, it would still tower over everything, pretty much, wouldn't it? It'd be enormous.
Yes, it would. And it had such amazing things at various times, such as a theatre with retractable seats and mechanical ventilation, seating 1,200 people. Now, that's an enormous number of people in 1890s, isn't it? And, I mean, that's almost twice as many seats as there are in the WEC. Yes, it was a strong and vibrant town at that stage.
I'm sure the shows that were coming through were perhaps a bit more bawdy than some of the things we might see these days as well. Who knows?
Yeah. It could be.